meeting to order.
Caucusing.
Could we call the roll?
Maria DeAnda.
Here.
Jim DeMartini. Gordon Ford. Darren Garrett.
Here.
Jeff Grover.
Here.
Mike Lynch.
Here.
Ron Martin.
Here.
Michael O'Neill.
Here.
Donna Riley.
Here.
Joan Clendenin. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Tom. We're going to now adjourn into a closed session on personnel and litigation matters. We'll begin with personnel matters.
I move to motion closed session.
Oh, I need a motion. Motion.
She made the motion. I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. So at 3:23, and for the record, we would like to reflect that first Mr. Ford and Mr. DeMartini arrived just after our closed session.
And I had the times.
Okay. And that both Mr. O'Neill and Joan Clendenin recused themselves from the second item on executive session, which was a status report on the Nato-Zuri lawsuit. There's no other report from executive session. Our recruitment efforts continue, and we are now back on our regular agenda. Is there anyone here? Are there any announcements first, Tom? We have any announcements?
Just real quickly, members got new seating assignments today, and if you like your seating assignment, Kelly did it, and if you don't like it, you can blame me. That's how that goes, but that's about it.
Okay. Is there any public comment on items not on the agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on. Consent calendar.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved and approved to pass, or moved and seconded to approve the consent calendar. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Paul,
yes.
You're on.
Thank you. This should not take much time at all. Hopefully. We're going to start with the June monthly performance report, which was the last month of the fiscal year.
Excuse me. One of our members actually has to leave in 20 minutes, and I know he's interested in the infrastructure item. Should we jump to that first?
Sure. We can jump to that. We have on the agenda the discussion and action of the RBC, Royal Bank of Canada Diversified Infrastructure Investment Fund. This has been ongoing between legal of Stan Serra and RBC, and being kept up with the emails.
Hi, Scott. This is Hank Scott from the Board of Equipment. Okay.
We jump to 7C.
7C.
I think 7C?
Yes.
On the next page.
And we have on the line Scott Smith, I believe, from Hanson Bridget, the outside legal counsel, advising us on this fund. And my sense is that we're at a point where we can bring to the board the approval of this investment, that outside counsel is satisfied with the side letter and the final draft of the fund's LPA. We had indicated a commitment of $40 million to this fund, which was approved subject to external legal counsel being satisfied with the terms. And I would, from the legal standpoint, if you have any questions for Scott, now would be the time to ask them, and I can help out on the investment side. We negotiated the fees down to 50 basis points for RBC based on a commitment level above a certain amount, which got rid of a lot of the breakpoints and just got us to the 50 basis points, which I'm satisfied. And I continue to be satisfied from an investment standpoint that this is a good opportunity to put in the Special Situations Fund at a $40 million commitment, which will be drawn down over time, not all at once, and with a expected return on a net basis conservatively of 8 to 11% of which half should be generated by income and the other half by appreciation. But now's the time to ask Scott, or to have Scott just kind of summarize the process and, you know, where we ended up at.
Mr. Smith, please give us that summary and indicate areas of concern that you may have or you might have had that have now been removed.
Sure. Well, so at least a couple of months ago, probably more in the neighborhood of 3 months ago, I was engaged to review the fund documents and assist with negotiation of any terms that were problematic and the implementation of a side letter. And I worked closely with Tom Watson and Fred Silva to work through the documents and explain any issues or concerns that I have. Generally speaking, you know, just the starting point with this fund was much more favorable than the previous opportunity that we looked at for you guys. And we were pleased to see that the terms were much more favorable or even handed insofar as limited partners were concerned. We raised you know, a number of different issues in terms of increasing information rights or reporting to you of you know, related party transactions and things such as that, and just trying to loosen up things in terms of the information you would receive or deadlines to which you were subject, just to give you more wiggle room and make sure we didn't, you know, back ourselves into any corners. Generally, the fund was very receptive towards most of our changes. As a earlier or early investor in this fund, we also had the benefit of fund counsel suggesting that some of these changes were made directly to the fund documents themselves. So the partnership agreement, for instance, and the subscription documents that you'll be entering into. And they did just that. And it's rare in my experience that you'll find funds that actually go to that length to accommodate investor issues or concerns. And you know, really at the end of the day, I would, you know, put this in the category of, you know, the top you know, percent, you know, I mean, in the 5% range in terms of favorable outcomes of negotiations in terms of getting everything that we asked for, as well as, you know, relatively even-handed documents to begin with. So I don't know that there's anything that I point to as a sticking point or a concern. I think RBC has been very flexible and willing to accommodate to make sure you feel as though you're getting the information you will require to monitor this investment and performance, as well as just the activities of the fund in general, and the economics as well are I think quite favorable, comparing them to other investments that I've looked at. So I don't know that I would necessarily point my finger to anything as something that would, you know, stand out or you know, still fall in the category of problematic. Negotiations were quite successful.
All right, so then Scott and Tom and Paul, what we have before us today essentially is the final version of what we already voted for.
Yes.
With our concerns, you know, addressed to your satisfaction and all of you.
Yes.
Okay. Members, comments?
Can you tell us the difference between the state of Delaware laws and California laws? Do we know any major concerns?
Well, the more general issue is that Delaware is more favorable towards management, perhaps, than shareholders. I don't know that I can point to any specifics. It does... you know, loosen maybe to some extent, and it's not so much in the corporate law or partnership law as it is in case law and the decisions of the Delaware courts, I think, that maybe loosen some of the standards to which the key principles are subject. But I don't think that it's necessarily something that is a do or don't way of viewing things or going at it in terms of those differences. I think they're somewhat negligible. I will advise companies and partnerships that I'm working with that, you know, there's really not much benefit over going with Delaware law than California, and I have a hard time putting, you know, my finger on specifics because I think it's really diving into the minutiae of the law. You know, we did negotiate the application of California law insofar as things that are unique to you as a public retirement system in California. So you still do receive the benefits of California law in many respects as far as this investment is concerned.
Okay, Gordon, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Jeff?
Two parts of the question, and Paul or Scott or Tom, I mean, anybody on the board. First is, how big do we think this fund will be ultimately? We're putting in 40. Where do we think it will go?
I think initially it should start at between 100 and 125 million with Royal Bank of Canada and their pension fund, Royal Bank of Canada's pension fund being the other two initial investors, making up the other 60 to 85 million. And we think they're looking to raise between 500 and a billion, 500 million and a billion.
Okay. And I've had a conversation with Chairman Lynch, and he's indicated that he intends to ask me to be this board's representative to this fund.
Okay.
What are the top two or three concerns that I should be looking out for as I represent this organization on that board? What would be the things you'd be watching on something like this?
I can compile a list for you, but okay. Off the top of my head, would be the selection of the underlying managers. They'll be selecting infrastructure funds from various managers. It's a fund of funds. How they go about doing that. I think also would be the obviously the performance of the fund. And then third would just be the adherence to their, you know, to the agreement that was drawn up. But I can do that separately for you.
Okay, so you'll be monitoring that on a regular basis?
Yes, we will be dealing with them on performance. We need to select the appropriate benchmark as we get close, which is kind of now, if we move forward. And we had talked about before that the underlying investments in the companies by the underlying managers are in our understanding are primarily investment grade type of companies. So we want to track the debt issued by these companies that they're purchased by the underlying managers and what the ratings are of that debt.
So. Scott, anything to add?
I think one of the main responsibilities or areas of oversight for the advisory committee is conflict of interest transactions. Yeah. And so those will be presented to the advisory committee, and the advisory committee's advice and input may be sought in reference to those. And so that is an area I think would be one of your areas of focus also. To the extent, you know, they're doing transactions with related parties or they're somehow involved, then, you know, that's an area that I look for and try to get you as much notice and approval rights over, and the advisory committee specifically builds that out. So that will fall within your purview, and I would keep an eye out for that.
Okay, that sounds good. Scott, are you going to continue as an advisor to Stan Serra on this fund?
If and when requested, I'm more than happy to. So as their, you know, need arises on an ongoing basis, certainly.
It seems to me that if Scott has done most of the work on these documents, which is
yes,
more than I'm going to commit to remembering, it would be good at least periodically if he could review where we're at on that.
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
So I think what the board needs to do is to adopt the final version of the side letter, approve it, and sign it, correct, Tom? So is there a motion to do that from the board?
To review it?
No, to approve it.
Approve.
To approve it and move it forward based on the investment.
I have a question.
Sure.
This is the side letter?
Tom?
Or is it the document marked confidential?
Oh, side letter would be, it would look like a letter. It does look like a letter. I didn't print out.
This is it here. This is the initial draft.
Yeah.
Right. Looks like a letter.
Okay.
Is it the one that says execution version at the top?
The one that doesn't have any dates built.
Yeah.
I think it says execution version at the top.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, based on advice of counsel and SIS, I'll move approval.
Is there a second?
No second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Opposed.
Okay, let the record show that Mr. Ford voted no. I would like to also, on this issue, affirm the appointment of Jeff Grover as the representative to the advisory board and the appointment of Jim DeMartini as the alternate to that board.
I'll make that motion. No motion. Okay.
It's part of that motion.
Supervisor appointees?
Well, he's not a supervisor.
Board appointee.
Yes, I'm appointing Jeff and Jim, the J's. If you were here longer, we could do it, Joan.
Okay. The prerogative.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Okay, is that all?
I have a kind of follow-up question.
Sure.
On management fee, mm-hmm. talks about 0.50%. What are we looking at in terms of dollars on that?
See, 1% can be 400,000, so a half is about 200,000.
That's what their fee's going to be?
With that full fund.
It's fully
funded.
So
1% of 40 million is 400,000, so it's 200,000.
Yeah. Pardon me?
200,000 is correct. When it's fully funded, yeah.
What's the timeline on funding? Do you have any idea?
I suspect it'll be 2 years before it gets fully funded. 2 to 3 years.
And the commitment and the investment is for what time?
10 years.
Okay.
And we're starting with 10 million or
40.
40 million commitment. Depends how it's called. Okay. Ready for June monthly? June was the last month of fiscal year 2011, and May and June felt like they were really, really bad months, but it didn't end up that badly. The market did rally the last month of June, so it could have been a lot worse. You see the one-month numbers down about 1.8 to 2%. Non-U.S. equities did a little better with the ACWI World ex-U.S. Down 1.4%. And bonds for the month were down slightly. For the fiscal year, you see the Russell 3000 up 32.4%, a very, very strong year. Small caps, the Russell 2000 up 37.4% for the 1 year. And as we've been saying, growth outperformed value by significant levels for the year to June 30th. The ACWI ex-US was up 30.3%, trailing the U.S. market slightly, and emerging markets trailed developed markets for the first time in a number of years, with the EM equities up 28.2%. For bonds, it was a very strong first part of the year, and then we finally, kind of what we've been saying for a while, we saw bonds flatten out the last 6 months, with the aggregate up 3.9%, although high yields were up a big 15.3%, and again, Dodge and Cox, as we know, is overweight corporates and underweight treasuries, so they benefited from the corporate index being up 6.6% versus treasuries. Longer term numbers, 10 years, Russell 3000 up 3.4%, non-U.S. up 7.9%, emerging markets up a big 16.5% for the 10 years, and the bonds up 5.7% as part of that huge number of years of interest rates falling, with our fear now that they're bottoming out and potentially going higher in the future, hence our recommendation to go into a fund like the Infrastructure Fund. The next page, we stood at 1.4 $1.412 billion at the end of June. We did rebalancing in the beginning of June, as you recall, out of equities into fixed income, Dodge and Cox, and that brought the asset classes back towards their targets, very close. Cash was high at the end of June because we had $20 million raised with the two non-U.S. equity managers, LSV and Pyramus, earmarked for the RAFI long short fund, which was allocated to them right in the beginning of July. And my recollection is they're long Google and short IBM in that fund, but I'm sorry.
As long as not the opposite in Salem Key County.
It might be. You see the current manager balances being close to target, and on page two, the next page, cash, again, we said at $28 million, we rebalanced it, the other asset classes from the prior month. That's why the changes were so big, with fixed income going up by $50 million. The total fund was down $20 million from the prior month, and from the prior year was up a big $224 million, including the benefits paid over the 12-month period. Page three, the individual managers. LSV and Pyramus held $10 million right at the end of the month going out, and they're all very close to targets with our rebalancing, which appears to be fairly timely. And on page four, you can see total cash less that $20 million was at $14.7 million, which is a small amount in relation to the balances for each of the managers. The next page goes over the performance for the prior 2 months and for the 12-month period, fiscal year. For the month, no one really outperform or underperform significantly. Legato might be the one exception, up 1% for the month following the good May, turning their performance around. As you can see, their fiscal year to date was down 1.7%, but they were down between 3 and 4% at their low point during the fiscal year. Delaware's had a better run recently also, up 1.3% for the 12 months. Dodge and Cox performed well. And the total domestic overall, including Capital's prospects, good year of 2.5% alpha, was 34.6 versus 32.3. So good beta and great alpha from domestic equity. The months of June and May showed slight outperformance in alpha in those negative months, which is a good sign also. Previously, when we had down months, we tended to underperform. And these last couple of months, although they're only slightly down, we held our own. Fixed income, we've seen the alpha gain by the two managers kind of stopped these last couple of months with the fixed income markets being slightly down. The overweight to spread products got hit a little bit these last 2 months, so both managers pretty much performed in line with the benchmark the last 2 months, although prior to these last 2 months of the fiscal year, the first 10 months were very good months in alpha, especially for Dodge and Cox, as corporates did, their spreads continue to narrow overall. And you can see a very large 2.4% in alpha, which is extremely large for a bond manager, not taking on huge amounts of risk. PIMCO was up 78 basis points for the 12 months. And overall, 5.9% for fixed income for 12 months versus 3.9, or roughly 200 basis points of alpha. Good alpha, and not bad beta. 3.9. I think it's lower than what we've been seeing, and we would expect bonds. We'd be happy for 3.9% return in the index going forward in the next 12 to 24 months. Non-U.S. LSV had it. Okay month, 26 bips, 85 bips for the year, and Pyramus added a little value too. So again, we had great beta in the equities, international ACWI up 30.3, and we added about 55 basis points of alpha in that asset class. The REIT manager, Invesco, has been in line with the benchmark the last 2 months. A very strong return of 32.1, although it trailed its benchmark of 33.2. It also closed the gap, much like Legato did the last few months of the fiscal year. And the total fund for the month of June, in line with policy, now 1.17. And then for the fiscal year to date, we're looking at around 23% return versus 21.4 for the policy. So a very strong return. That will help the actuary, rolling market value, et cetera. And, July's been a very interesting month for the first month of the new fiscal year with the debt ceiling issues and Europe peripheral sovereign debt issues. Page 6, Dodge & Cox equity on a rolling 3 years on a monthly basis is looking better, trending upwards. 7, Delaware also trending upwards above 0% and 1% now for 3 years. Pyramus continues to be very much benchmark-like. LSV has had strong performance over the past few months on a rolling 3-year basis. And Invesco is creeping up back towards the index level. And finally, on page 11, Dodge & Cox fixed income. Very, very strong alpha for a core fixed income manager. And with that, before I go to the top 10 holdings of each manager, I'll take any questions on performance.
Paul, first with Invesco.
Uh-huh.
As we get closer back to par, what's going to be your recommendation?
It's more a recommendation not on are they getting closer to the par to increase them. It's just the underlying fundamentals
right.
of REITs and are they becoming, at a level where it's, quote, more cheap than they've been. So we will work with them. I'll call them after this meeting and see where they're at, but I'll come back to the board next month.
Good. And then on our fixed income with Dodge and Cox style, they're short on treasuries with the debt issue. I mean, treasuries certainly haven't been following the market news.
It's kind of weird, isn't it?
It is. but if it does become a reality or depending on what they do in solving the debt issue,
right.
Where do you see us positioned?
I think we're okay. It's weird that the 10-year Treasury yield was, I think, right at 3% today. So the bond market is telling us this debt ceiling.
Yeah, it got down as low as 294.
Yeah, the bond market's telling us this debt ceiling is not an issue, but in my mind, it is an issue. And it seems to be, and the equity market's been fairly strong through this period, too. It's sold off a little bit the last couple of days. But my sense is that all the good news is already baked into the market. And if this debt ceiling issue carries on past the, quote, deadline, it's not in the market.
Correct.
And my reading some different pieces is that they think the short and long-term rates, if we don't reach a compromise and the debt ceiling is put out a couple years, that rates could go up immediately 50 to 100 basis points. And I think corporates would outperform treasuries, though, because this is a, quote, treasury issue. I think corporates would be hit, too, but not as much. So Dodge and Cox would, and every bond manager would be hurt to a certain extent, but Dodge and Cox should outperform its benchmark in that period. I mean, the other alternative is not a good one either, going to cash.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm just thinking out loud.
No.
But it's curious how yields.
It's almost as if it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like they're saying the president can use emergency powers and raise the debt ceiling, so it doesn't matter.
Right, that he could push it out. Right.
Well, I think my opinion is they look around the rest of the world and they still see the United States as the only safe haven, even with our problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, they see it a sizable market. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's like China with all its reserves. Where else can it go? I mean, it can go here or there to a certain extent,
right.
but it's kind of forced to go here regardless.
Right.
And I've read China's been talking to certain people too, making sure that this gets resolved.
Well, because China's, if it keeps going the way they're going, they're going to need a lot of liquidity.
Yeah.
So they want us to solve our problem because they may need it. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah.
Isn't, for lack of a better term, the current wisdom that the markets have already adjusted or reacted to the political environment?
I don't think so, Joe, because we were, like we're saying, yields have, you would think, given what the political climate is, and that there's a chance that nothing gets done on this debt ceiling, you would think that yields would be creeping up, but they're not. And as Gordon says, it's like they know that worst comes to worst, the president can use his executive powers, I guess, and extend it a certain amount. Yeah. So the markets are...
Part of the analysis I heard was that if they don't deal with the debt and the spending, if they just deal with the debt and not with the spending, that could affect the markets too.
It could, but it really appears they're tied to the hip both. That I mean, it's...
The debt issue is bigger than the spending issue?
No, the debt issue will... The spending needs to be reduced to raise the debt. I don't... Unless the president on his own does some action. But I don't know. The markets are saying it's not an issue, though.
All things in moderation.
And in my mind, that makes it... The potential possibilities that the market's saying it's not an issue, where yields are and how equities have continued to be fairly strong or not selling off sharply, that most of the good news is in the market, and maybe the risk is to the downside at the downside at this point.
Part of that, Paul, is the last 2 years the biggest buyer of U.S. Treasury has been the Federal Reserve.
And they're stopping.
So we're taking money out of the Treasury to pay the debt to the Federal Reserve. We're not going to default.
No.
We don't have to pay ourselves. there's money to pay.
I just...
So that's part of the issue.
I can't imagine this, this political fighting that's going on to reach a compromise or a solution will end up with the debt ceiling not being dealt with properly and rates just skyrocketing. I just can't imagine. And the markets are...
And if rates go up, how are we going to pay our debt? We can't pay it at zero. How are we going to pay it at 50 bps or...
Well, that's why the Fed's kept rates at zero.
And that's why they're going to keep them.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Don't they pay it with inflation?
Well, that's the Treasury selling U.S. Treasuries to the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
They're printing money, in essence, by buying them from yourself. That's inflation.
Okay. Top 10 holdings. We're going to start with BlackRock Large Cap Growth. You see the top position being Apple. As of we did this on July 18th, was up relative 11.3% to the index. And Google was up 17.9%. Both had reported very strong earnings. And today, fast forward, both stocks hit 52-week highs today, despite the issues going on, with Apple now selling above $400 a share. Next page, large cap value. Chevron, largest position in the index, good relative change. Oils have reversed course the last couple months. Remember, we were showing you oils have been selling off. They've rallied now in relation to their benchmark this month. Defenses are still acting good. Procter & Gamble and J&J on this list, on a relative basis, still strong. Capital prospects on the next page. Gulfport Energy, another oil company, which had been on this list prior month or two on a negative fashion relative change, up 16%. One of their insurance companies up 14%. Delaware, the next page. Apple's their largest position at 6.2%. As of this date, July 18th, they had a relative change of 11.26%. That equates to about 65 basis points of alpha, that one position, given the size and the concentration. And it's gone up more since this report. Dodge and Cox, the next page. A couple of their top two, three positions, Comcast Capital One, slight, you know, relatively weak versus the index. Positions 5 through 9 all strong. They kind of cross each other out. Legato on the next page. First six positions were down. Last month, I think all 10 were up. So, but one thing to keep in mind, because they're a manager-manager program and they have 300-400 positions in their portfolio, you can see the weights of each of the position are fairly low. 1.5% is their largest position. Delaware, a concentrated manager, 6% was their largest position. So the effect of the top 10 is much less with them than a concentrated manager having a diversified portfolio. Of course, we don't like to see their top six down, but last month the top 10 were up, and the positions 7 through 10 are at least up nicely, and we don't know what the rest of the portfolio is doing. So it's, I would expect them to be down for the month based on this, but maybe not. Bank of New York, S&P 500 index. Again, Apple is the second largest cap-weighted company in the whole country, having a huge effect there. Some of the big oils, ExxonMobil and Chevron, also performing well. And lastly, the two non-U.S. Stock managers, LSV, showing some of their positions down. The European oils were down mid-month. They've rallied since then, Repsol and Eni. European banks, Societe Generale, a question was asked before me, why would anyone hold a European bank in their portfolio? Good question. LSV is a quantitative manager that runs a factor-based model. These stocks are cheap on a valuation basis. Now, they're holding them in relationship to the benchmark weight. So they actually might, I don't know what the weight of Societe Generale is in the benchmark, but they might be underweight or slightly overweight. I had lunch with Joseph Lekanishak within the last week, and he said he is mindful of what's going on with Europe, and he is adjusting positions from the model, making them closer to benchmark weight if they have large overweights, knowing what we all know. And lastly, Pyramus on the last page, top four positions up. Another European bank, the ninth position, BNP Paribas, down 14.5% in relationship to the index, although they have a very diversified list where that position is only 83 basis points. So, Apple and Google very strong. The oils have reversed course and rallied. The defensive stocks, the Procter & Gamble's, J&J's, large pharma, continuing to hold up fairly well. And European positions selectively have sold off with the debt situation over there.
Any questions of Paul? Paul, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next item is members forum. Why don't we start with Gordon? Pass. Okay. Darren?
Pass.
Ron?
Pass.
Joan? Jim?
I have nothing today.
Nothing bad.
Maria?
Nothing for me today.
Mike?
Just okay. Overwhelmed.
This meeting is adjourned.
Yes.